What does true wellness mean to you? I'm Claudia Cometa, and that is the question I will be leading with in the Minding Wellness podcast. Each and every week, I will bring you experts who will share their personal wellness journeys and their insights into what it means to mind our wellness. Health is a state of body. Wellness is a state of being. Let's dive into improving our state of being. Thank you so much for joining me on episode 34 of the Minding Wellness podcast. Today, I have Dr. Taylor Brana. He is a second-year psychiatry resident, the creator of the Happy Doc podcast, and co-founder of MedFlash Go. He is a former Division I athlete in the sport of gymnastics and competed in multiple NCAA championships. His passions include education, technology, meditation, and holistic health and wellness. His mission is to help humanity create more meaningful and fulfilled lives. In this episode, we talk about the radical acceptance of what is, as well as being an agent for change in the medical field. I hope you enjoy this podcast episode as much as I did. I am so excited to have Dr. Taylor Brana here with me today on the Minding Wellness podcast. This was kind of a cold reach out, and I'm really excited that he agreed to be on here with us. I crossed his path virtually on Instagram, actually, saw that he has a podcast named Happy Doc Podcast, and of course, that sort of spurred my curiosity to look in a little bit further. And I looked into the work he's doing, and I thought it was a fabulous alignment with my goals on this podcast. And I think his insights are going to be extremely valuable to our listeners. So I asked him to come on, and he graciously agreed. Thank you so much for coming on today, Taylor.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And just to clarify, so all of my social media handles are at Happy Doc Podcast. But the podcast itself, if you search it on iTunes or online, it's going to be The Happy Doc, just to clarify. But yeah, I'm really excited for this interview. I know it's going to be great, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the questions.
Great, and thanks for that clarification, because I know sometimes that can get tricky with words being left out or entered in incorrectly. So, and I will have all of that in our show notes, so you can always refer back to that. And as I start out every podcast episode, I will do the same with you, and that is, what does true wellness mean to you?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really like open-ended question, but when I kind of just look inside and figure that out for myself, I really just think at the end of the day, I'm a big guy when it comes to our overall energy and personal energy. So when you think about that like metaphor of that full cup, if you talk about yourself as a cup and that cup being full and being able to overflow because you have developed a lifestyle or a mindset or a way of acting in the world that lets your cup overflow with energy, I think that's what wellness really means to me. So basically trying to understand what it is that you enjoy in life, understanding what it is that you want, understanding what goals you would personally like to pursue. And I think there's a lesson in that even within this question, which is, I just think a lot of people feel really guilty, especially in the medical field and health professional field, to take care of themselves first and then give from a space of fullness. And what ends up happening, especially in the medical field, is we're giving from a space of emptiness and forgetting our own wellness and energy levels. So a long-winded answer maybe, but basically let's get our cups full and then let's give. So wellness to me is trying to find that full cup.
I love that. And I actually speak those words often because I do believe that we attempt to give from a place of depletion and scarcity, not out of intention. We think we're doing the right thing, but we simply don't understand that we have to, you know, put our oxygen masks on first. And we sometimes just forget that. And then we just deplete ourselves. So I'm huge on energy. Energy is definitely something that I
protect and my own, honestly, I'm very protective of my energy, of what's around me and the energy that I'm giving out. And so definitely all those pieces are in alignment with a lot of my beliefs. So that's fabulous. Let's give our listeners sort of a background of who you are, where you've come from, and what you're currently up to.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Taylor. I was born in California, NorCal in the Bay Area, if people are familiar. I grew up there till I was around 15. I moved to Las Vegas for 2 years, and then I moved to Philadelphia and I went to Temple University for undergrad. A little background that's pretty influential in my life is I was a competitive gymnast, and I competed since I was 6 years old, and then later trained and actually performed at the NCAA championships in gymnastics. That's actually one of the reasons I moved to Philadelphia, because Temple had a Division I sports team and I wanted to compete and be able to compete and also get an education. So that's really big. And then I've always been interested about health, mostly from the athletic background. I'd look up things like nutrition and how to feel good and to maximize your strength and all those types of things. And then that progressed into trying to want to help other people in the field of health. So I was thinking about physical therapy initially. And then I realized that going to learn about being a physician and working in that field would be something that I think would be very helpful and beneficial for myself in terms of education and also giving back to other people. And it's the stereotypical sort of epitome of, you know, giving back to others in a way. I think a lot of people aspire to be physicians. And so it felt like the path that was right for me. And now I'm here today. I'm in psychiatry in my second year residency and still training. It's a difficult path, but it's also very valuable. So I'm very overall happy now. It's taken a process to get there. But yeah, I've gone through a lot of this process. And as you had mentioned before, I created a podcast around trying to find happiness in medicine and in life.
I really think that your background is pretty, it's pretty inspiring. Competitive, you know, gymnast. I know from a few friends of mine who have their kids in gymnastics, that's an intense sport, way more intense than I think those of us who don't know much about it understand. I know that they're practicing most every day of the week for several hours. So I think that says a lot about, you know, just your work ethic in general. And so we might even bring that back, some of the insights from that near the end. But I find it, you know, very much in great alignment for you to have a career focus in psychiatry and pursue a passion for identifying, you know, self-care and other practices that keep physicians happy and avoiding burnout. In an article I read, you actually said solving an issue like physician burnout won't happen by talking about it in private. To expand and make change, we need to improve and increase our voice. Can you tell us a bit more about your podcast, how it came about, and sort of its mission in the world?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, at first I wasn't so happy. I mean, that's really where it all starts. So like in my life, I'm generally a happy-go-lucky person. So I would say in my natural state, I'm usually like high energy, I'm excited, I'm talkative, I'm friendly. And all of those things kind of came into a sudden halt when I went into medical school. You know, first year was okay. But as things progressed and I went into second year, like we were talking about energy before, I just felt like my energy was totally diminished. I was tired. I was anxious. I started getting abdominal pain, like, you know, reflux symptoms. I was getting lower back pain. I was getting all of these kind of physical symptoms and mental symptoms that I really did not have growing up or really have throughout my life. And I had to kind of figure out what was going on in that space. So even though it's called the happy doc, in a way I was kind of like a depressed, anxious doc, if you want to say it like that. And as I was progressing, I mean, this was around board season. So like in the second year of medical school, you have to take step one. It's the first boards exam you take. And it's just extremely stressful. I mean, it's a very competitive environment and yeah, you're putting everything on the line. And if you don't pass, it really doesn't look very good. So there's a lot of stress around this exam. And then I went into my first clinical rotation and I asked the internal medicine doctor I was working with, I was like, hey, what gets you excited about medicine? And she told me, I'm excited for my 7 days off, because she had a 7 days on, 7 days off schedule. So I realized quickly that there's a lot of people around me who are burnt out. And that's not a really great thing to hear when you're aspiring to be excited about your field. So that kind of progressed into me thinking about, well, if there are some people that are happy, or if I imagine that there are people that are excited about the field, maybe it would be great to have a platform to understand what those people are doing. What are they doing differently? What are the habits, the routines, the mindset, the actions they're taking? And so I wanted to reach out to those people, because I want to be excited about life. You know, this life is finite. We're only on this earth for a specific amount of time. And I really don't want to be in the space of negativity and dwelling on the terrible things around our life. And I'd much rather try to achieve more and succeed and be excited and inspire people. And so I wanted to really create this inspirational podcast. In terms of the quote you mentioned, if things are frustrating us, if we're noticing problems, if we're noticing issues, we have to talk about it, whether that's first admitting it to ourselves or going a step further and reaching out locally and talking to our community, the people in our hospital, or if we expand just a little bit further and then go onto that national scale or a podcast or in a blog. We have to start to communicate the things we're seeing if we're ever going to make change. So you can't make change on things you haven't communicated. And that's really kind of how I felt about it. So I wanted to take that next step and start to communicate the problems I was seeing, my frustrations, and understanding if there are tangible ways for us to start to move forward.
I think this is so fabulous. And this goes back to what we talked about just right before we started recording the podcast. And that is, you know, we're either criticizers or we're producers and agents for change. So it would be really easy for you or anybody else in the field, or even me, you know, coming from the healthcare professions, to criticize what's gone wrong instead of working on highlighting what is going right and attempting to change what is going wrong. And so I love that the platform is not about, you know, quite honestly, being a bitch session. It's not about that. It's about, you know, what are people doing who are happy, and how can we learn from them, and how can we reevaluate our situation? And instead of maybe running in the other direction and leaving the profession that we went into for very set specific reasons, how can we, you know, reestablish a love for that and a passion for that? And so I love that, because I actually talked to, you know, Dr. Pepper, who was on here recently, and she was saying that, you know, we were talking about how we don't want mass amounts of great physicians to leave the profession. We need good physicians right in the profession. And so, you know, supporting them in that and giving them some of the answers that they need and are looking for is really quite helpful. So what would you say are some of the insights you've gained from the guests you've had? Because you've been doing this for a couple years now, right?
Yeah. So it's been about 2.5 years, and I think we're on episode 114, some single episodes, some episodes that we're interviewing other people. And yeah, we've gathered a lot of insights along the way. So the issue around burnout, or what some people are calling moral injury, or what in my head is honestly just energy depletion, whatever you want to label it, that's a very negative energy state. So we have to kind of understand and unpack what's going around the field of medicine first. And one of the problems that comes up first is that people make this an individual problem, and they use blame as a way to describe what's going on. We are blaming the physicians, the pharmacists, the health professionals, the nursing staff, whomever. We're blaming the individual for the issue. But we're also not looking at the hospital system. We're not looking at the national system that's involved. There's this term, just to describe this a little bit, when you use burnout, it's often implying that the person, there's something wrong with the individual. When you use the term moral injury, which is another kind of, it's getting a little bit more traction. Moral injury just means that at the end of the day, what we really want, when you look at it, you know, from a simple point of view, what we really want is to help another human being. That's why we went into this field. So every time we see a patient, our goal is to help that person, right? Just like with any other field, when you're coaching or whatever the field may be. The problem is there's many things that actually get in the way of you just helping that person, whether it's insurance, the electronic medical record, being able to actually prescribe medications you think would actually be helpful versus what they can afford, maybe access to the right healthcare at the right time, at the right place. There's all of these different things that get in the way. There's distractions that come in when you're getting pages from all around the hospital. So all of these logistical issues end up getting in the way of the actual patient care that you want. These little micro traumas that happen throughout the day causes you this moral injury, this injury to yourself that you're not able to give to your patients and give to others in the ways that you actually want to. You know, it's not that romanticized view of, ooh, I'm going to sit in this room, we're going to have this deep conversation, I'm going to heal you, and you're going to feel amazing afterwards. A lot of that gets taken away. It's not the reality of the situation. So what are the insights that kind of help improve this or move forward? First, even though it might not be 100% your fault, you do have to, you have to take back locus of control. So there was this really life-changing book I'd read for me personally. It was called Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach, and you might be familiar with that book. But basically, you have to completely accept every situation in your life. A lot of times people remove control from their life and they give their power away to something else. The fact of the matter is your situation, what's going on, is exactly where you're at, and you need to accept it. And not accept it in this like passive term, but just understand that this is your day. You have your 24 hours a day and you're gonna have to make the best of it. And then how do you take control? So on the individual level, by the way, I could talk about this at length, right? So on the individual level, you have to figure out how you're going to reclaim your positivity, reclaim your energy. So you have to literally sit down, and it's very important to do this. You know, again, you're only on this earth for a finite amount of time. You have to figure out what are the things you actually want to achieve? What are the things that give you energy? Whether that's, you know, I love swimming. I love biking. I love connecting with friends. I love going out in nature. I love community. I like dancing. I like these things. Make a list of the things you really love. More than likely, you're not really spending time doing those things. And as such, your energy is not getting recharged. Part of that also is, let's look at the basics. Are you sleeping effectively? Are you giving yourself the right nutrition? Are you drinking enough water? Are you spending time and cultivating effective relationships, or at least connecting with people in a meaningful way? Those are like very basic things all humans need. And in the health profession, for some reason, we end up forgetting those things. The issue is that our time is so truncated and we're so busy that we're not able to necessarily take advantage of all of those things. So those are some personal things. And I'm a big fan of meditation. That might be maybe a separate thing we can talk about. And I think meditation has been very important for self-awareness and insight. Let's say you're doing the best you can. Actually, another thing I would love to talk about too is mental priming. It's something I've been doing a little bit more of, and I think it really is helpful. So maybe that'll be like a separate thing, asterisk or whatever, that we can maybe talk about afterwards, is mental priming and meditation. I think those are two really big things. But then moving beyond the self, you have to, again, like we had kind of discussed earlier, you have to start to voice in a professional way, in a way that's effective, the issues you're seeing around you. There's a lot of things that actually are fixable or can change that aren't so huge. For example, in my residency, I'll give you an example. There are times when there's these little issues that happen at transitions of care. For example, maybe I'm on night shift and then we have to do sign out. And there are these times where maybe that communication isn't so effective. So like we'll have meetings as a group, and it's very important that you voice authentically. Like, for example, be like, hey guys, when it came to signing out, I really don't think I'm getting the right information about certain patients. I would really love it if we just spent maybe a couple extra minutes really focusing in on some of the areas or the patients that have been giving us some issues or important points that we need to be communicating at transitions of care, because I think we're missing some of these points. And I won't go through specifics, obviously, because mm-hmm. of HIPAA and those types of things. But having that local conversation is really important. I think a lot of people, you know, blame their hospital, blame their system. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't communicate, you have no ability to even know if they're actually going to start to take some action. Now, if you do communicate and the action's not happening, maybe that says something about your environment. And, you know, we can't always change our environment acutely or right away, but we can change our environment in the long term. So that's another way to look at, you know, transitioning your locus of control. And then on the national scale, we have to be thinking about policies, hospital-wide policies, you know, statewide policies and national policies to start to really move the needle on this. I mean, a big issue right now in medicine for residents, for example, is we just don't sleep enough. I mean, we're allowed to work 24-hour shifts. We're allowed to work actually up to 28 hours in a day. You know, not to get into too many details, but like I'm on essentially a 6 day a week. I'm on nights this month. I've been working an entire month of nights straight, 6 days on, 1 day off, approximately 10 to 11 hours a night, sometimes 12. And it's pretty brutal. And I'm a very positive person, and I believe in myself, and I know I can get through that. But it's hard. It is hard. And I'm not a person that can't handle a challenge. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of issues we have to work on. So that's kind of the personal, hospital, and grander level. I think the biggest thing is understanding the short versus long-term version of yourself, understanding where your direction, where your needle points, knowing the compass you want to get to, and taking control to make sure you actually get there. And don't let all the negativity around you, don't let the voices around you, don't let people's opinions about what they think you should be doing or what you shouldn't be doing affect you. Because at the end of the day, your happiness is your responsibility. Accept fully where you're at and then attack your life. Do what you need to do to get to that happiness point. It might not happen right away, and it's going to take work. Life is work. This is a challenge, but we have to reclaim our energy, reclaim our power, and then move from that space as opposed to this kind of defeated attitude. There's so much I could talk about this. Obviously, I'm very passionate about it, but that's kind of my response, long-winded response.
No, that's fabulous. It gives me a lot of insights and a lot of, you know, jumping off points. I have not read Radical Acceptance. However, I am completely on board with that concept. In fact, I'm reading right now Byron Katie's Loving What Is. So it's a very similar concept with regard to reality is what it is. And, you know, our happiness or, you know, dissatisfaction about it comes from the stories we tell ourselves. And, you know, I think that a lot of what you said is in alignment with my beliefs. And you know, I really do want to dive into meditation and mental priming in a second. And I just wanted to touch on the fact that, you know, what you talked, well, first of all, sleep deprivation it's no joke. I mean, those of us who have been moms understand it. I have watched my husband with sleep deprivation in the medical field, and it's no joke. And I am a huge believer that sleep is so important. And yeah, we just don't have the encouragement and the support for, you know, a lot of people in the medical profession, definitely doctors, to get the sleep they need. And so when we talk about, you know, the handoff of, you know, night shift to morning shift and even within in the nursing shifts, the intention is get me out of here and to my bed as quickly as possible because I'm exhausted. And so a lot of that communication falls because there's a level of exhaustion, and that's just the reality. I would be in the same position of just get me home. And so, yeah, if we did have more of these discussions and more of the resources and support and, you know, and we could, there's so many parts of the system that could be better with slight changes. So I am in agreement with you on all of those. What I would like to do is make sure so we don't miss this is your approach and thoughts on meditation and mental priming and how you are able to, and maybe you're not, but how you're able to incorporate that in with your residency. So how much of your belief system and your maybe, you know, non-Western approaches are accepted in your residency to actually help patients with, like, is that being accepted? So that's kind of what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, first off, I don't like necessarily openly talk about it. Like, it's not something I talk about at lunch all the time or bring up, you know, spontaneously. I think in general, if I were to bring it up, it wouldn't be taken negatively or positively. It'd just be like, oh, that's something that Taylor does. Cool. So I don't think it necessarily has that much of a negative look as it might have in the past. I think meditation is mostly accepted now as a society, as opposed to kind of where it was before. In terms of my personal practice and how I sort of fit it in, I just think it's very important to have a very good morning routine. I think having a way of setting up your day for success and getting your mind right before you hit the stressors of the day is just absolutely important. So in my ideal day, and this doesn't always happen, and I've actually been working on this, it's been a process. For example, like a little side tangent, but I've been starting to form my not to do list, things I notice that I'm doing that I really shouldn't be doing. And one of the things I've been trying to eliminate is not grabbing my phone in the morning. It's not the first thing I should be doing. And I know where a lot of people are attached to social media. So that's actually been something on my not to do list. So sometimes it's really important in your morning just to realize what you shouldn't be doing right in the beginning, the things that are going to get you sidetracked from being productive. Anyways, so in general, at my best, I do, and again, this is not traditional at all, I do a set of either Wim Hof breathing or I believe it's called like dragon's breath. It's a type of like a nostril breathing. And I'll do that type of breathing just to kind of get my energy up. Then I will prime with gratitudes, general gratitudes in terms of just, I'm so excited for this morning. I'm excited that I woke up. I'm excited that I got to experience life. I'm excited that I have this body. I'm so grateful for this moment. I'm grateful that I can work in occupation. I think where the complaints come from and why gratitude is so special is it anchors you in the fact that you don't get anything in this life. Like the fact that I have a place to sleep, the fact that I have food on the table, that's a gift. That's not a given, right? So when you use gratitude, you put things into perspective. And I think that's the way of setting yourself up. If you expect to be given all of this amazingness in life, well, that's not the right attitude. I mean, that's where the complaints come in. So gratitudes are very helpful. Then the next step is set like a few minutes after that. I just take time to basically sit in peace. I do like basically a form of transcendental meditation. I took a course. So I just sort of sit in what you kind of described as what is. I just sit. I just pay attention. And I sit in that space and I just sit there calmly. And I spend a few minutes like that. And then I spend another few minutes imagining and visualizing what it is that I'm trying to reach, some of the top goals that I would like to get done, whether that's in terms of relationships or friendships or things I'd love to see for my family, things that if those things were achieved, how it would feel like right now in this moment, if I achieve that, how would I feel? And it basically floods my system with positivity and gratitude and peace. And then it really sets myself up for success. When I do that, I just notice that what would usually bother me doesn't really bother me, or in fact, I can transform the energy being thrown at me or the negativity or what have you into a positive sort of mind space. I'm not always successful at that. I'm human, and honestly, while I'm here on nights and doing that, it's very hard. But that's what I try to do. I mean, obviously, I miss that all the time, and I'm not perfect. But I don't beat myself up. I don't beat myself up for missing it. And so I think, you know, that's kind of my flow in terms of priming and a little bit of meditation. And that's been working for me.
I think that that is great. And I know that that's going to help a lot of our listeners because, you know, everybody's got to have their own practice. And so hearing the insights from different people, and you can pull in what you think will work for you. But I do always love the focus on gratitude, because I think that that is so huge. We just cannot be in the same space with gratitude and anxiety. So we have to choose either one, and in focusing on gratitude kind of lets the rest fall away. And I do love visualizing what we are attempting to reach and visualizing ourselves already having reached that. So I'm a huge fan of all of that. And I'm definitely a fan of the not to-do list, because I think phones are a huge source of our problem. Although they have given us a lot of access, they are also definitely on the con list in a lot of ways. So I'm glad that you brought that up as well. Would you say that, you know, if you were to come across a patient in your own work right now and who you thought would be able to benefit from this, what you just said, do you feel like you would have the ability and openness within your department to be able to recommend things like this, or is that kind of frowned upon?
Yeah, I mean, in full transparency, I do feel a little bit uncomfortable providing this information. Mostly because the paradigm, for example, in psychiatry, I don't think these concepts are taught or as accepted. And a lot of times people will chop it up to calling it spiritual woo-wah and they'll put it in that kind of box. I think that, you know, I think more holistically, and that's very important to me. And I do think that, yes, they're, I think that we need to accept that there's a spectrum of human beings. And if we're not aware of these different practices and how they can impact us, we're just gonna, you know, have to move on to things like medications and cognitive behavioral therapy. Nothing wrong with therapy. But I also want to understand, you know, I want people to know that there are other opportunities besides the traditional thinking around how, what it means to take care of yourself. And I do think that, a lot of people give away their personal power and are seeking, what's the word I'm looking for? They're seeking help, from external sources without also checking in to themselves and trying to guide their life in the best direction that they know. And the reason I say that is, no matter who you speak to, they're never gonna 100% know your life story. And I'm a big fan of really looking inside and understanding where you're coming from and crafting your own hero story, crafting the story that really rings true for you as opposed to what other people want from you. And sometimes that is not traditional. Sometimes it's not going to fit into the mold of what everyone expects from you. It's not going to 100% fit into the mold that the world expects from you. Obviously within reason, of course. I'm not telling you to do anything ridiculous. But just to say that we do have to also understand that we have to find ways to check in. And I think we're starting to accept this more, but to answer your question, no, it's very hard for me to answer these questions, and talk about this stuff in the traditional medical model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely, you know, see that and appreciate that from being in it myself. I definitely think that we have moved and progressed forward, but we're definitely still nowhere near the openness that I think we have to have, because every individual, again, as we know, is going to respond differently. And for some people, this might be the absolute answer. And, you know, to not be able to feel open to sharing that and guiding them through that, really can kind of be unfortunate and a disservice. So I love that you at least have the understanding of this, because I will give it to you. I mean, it took me, I was very much a part of the system, and this was all woo woo to me too for a long time, much longer in my life than you. And so I will give it to you for coming to this realization a lot sooner, and it will only benefit your own patients moving forward, that you, once you, you know, get out and have a little bit more freedom to do what you think is right. So, what do you hope to see change in the medical field to better support physicians? What are sort of your, you know, top things, if you could wave your wand, or that you're, you know, obviously personally working on, but if you could wave your wand and make a change, what would be, you know, your top priorities?
Yeah. Well, so something really interesting, and this is another area of interest of mine, is technology and how that can help us and mitigate a lot of these issues. So something I'm looking forward to is the intersection of a lot of these technologies in terms of artificial intelligence and voice applications, and how that could streamline healthcare and make it a lot easier for clinicians and nursing staff and all the other staff members to be able to balance communication with care and documentation and all of those things. My concern with that future is we have a tendency of, once we start to find ways of being more productive, we squeeze the person for all that they're worth. So my, even though I'm really excited about where we could be heading and making things even more efficient to actually allow it for physicians and other staff members to have more time. My concern is that we're going to squeeze them. So my magic wand would be, let's make this stuff more efficient. Let's increase the amount of professionals we're getting into the game. Let's actually figure out where the meat and potatoes are and figure out what we actually need to do to streamline healthcare and make the healthcare experience better. And then my caution with that future is, we have human pieces taking care of humans, and we need to understand what it means to have healthy humans. And I think what we're unfortunately doing right now is squeezing them for all their worth, instead of finding a space where they can be happy and have some freedom and creativity and autonomy. And those are all important things. So, that's what I'm looking forward to.
I'm definitely in agreement with that. And I have written many blog posts about, you know, the analogies to other sectors in our, you know, in our world, like, you know, the tech field, and even in, you know, high-end restaurants. I talk about the culture that is within some of those companies and how we could learn so much. We really could, you know, just looking at the cultures that have been built in other divisions, and, you know, how we could adopt some of those things and create, I mean, you know, there's these great companies that have amazingly happy, healthy employees. And it's so in touch that it's already being done. You know, all we have to do is look at, we don't even have to reinvent the wheel. So yes, to all of that.
The one pushback, you know, I have with that, and like, I'm, you know, again, extremely optimistic and everything, but the difficult part is in medicine. When you have, you know, a dying family member, someone who's very sick, there is so much pressure around that. And I think a lot of the fear and the litigation and the, you know, financial costs and all those things really, you know, in other fields, like the entrepreneurship world, for example, if your product doesn't work or things don't go right, I mean, there's no life at the end of that, right? You're not going to be hurting someone tremendously. So it is a conservative field for the right reasons. I totally get it. But it also is like we're talking about, it is important to start to incorporate these things from other groups and companies and the entrepreneur space, for example, and try to understand how we can improve this system together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As we start to round up, what I would like to ask now is, what would you say to, say, a freshman medical student who is full of hope for the future? And on the flip side, what would you say to the burnt out physician considering leaving the profession because he or she simply doesn't know another way out?
Yeah. So, I mean, in a kind of thematic answer, I would say like a lot of people like to look at things as black and white, and I really want us to appreciate the really wonderful gray out there. For the first year med student, you know, you're going to go into this process, and it's going to be hard. You're going to have a lot less time than you may have wanted. There's a lot of ways to make your time more efficient, great study tools and all those things. But I would really try to emphasize, you know, before starting, try to figure out the things that you really enjoy. Like if you had $1 billion and you had to figure out the things that you would actually do just for fun, the things that energize you and you just do it out of like pure joy, what are those things? And trying to maintain those interests. You know, for me, the big thing is, as an athlete, I had to exercise. Like, I just had to. I made that a priority. And I actually try to combine that with some like community. I actually ended up picking up like break dancing in med school, and that ended up being like a fun exercise, but also a group thing and friendships. So that was like a really fun way to incorporate those things. So for the first year med student, really figuring out those things, you're not going to be able to do it all, but figure out the relationships that are important, the activities that you still want to do, and blocking out time to do those things. For the burnt out, you know, exhausted physician, the thing is that when you're burnt out and exhausted, you're already in a depleted state. So it's very hard to think hopeful. So I think the first thing is just, you know, understanding that's where you're at. Like, so for example, right now, me being very exhausted from night float, I actually realized that my thinking and my actions and my level of energy right now is depleted. So I might not actually be making the best decisions for myself right now. And I have to be okay with that. I have to understand that when I'm in a better state, my decision-making might be better. So when you're not in a good place, it might be helpful to reach out to those people that might be in a better position or better energy state than you, people that you trust and love, to help and just connect with them and have them have them be able to help you if that's what you need. I'm a big fan of meditation as a way of rest, but really I think when you're depleted like that, you just have to listen to your body and listen to your needs. And what it really comes down to is if you're exhausted, burnt out and all those things, you're just not listening to your system. So again, it really, you have to really look into yourself, you know, whether that means more sleep, more, you know, more, you know, improved nutrition, better relationships and those things. The one thing I want to touch on in terms of, you know, burnout and exhaustion is that we really need to emphasize that it's, even though we love taking care of other individuals, in that moment, you really do have to make it about you. And sometimes that means that you are going to have to talk to your hospital or your clinic and say, look, I can't sustain this and I need to take off for clinical hours. I mean, for the best of the business and for myself, I'm going to have to remove a few hours. I think the big changes happen when we realize we have to quit some parts of ourselves, and no matter how stubborn we are. So to have that realization and to be able to remove some pieces to give yourself time is really important. So those are some, you know, thoughts around that.
Loved it. So I definitely think it's so important for med students and beyond to maintain interests and have those outlets, you know, some creative expression of what you enjoy doing that gives you energy. I think a lot of that gets lost because of just the rigors of medical school. And I also do love, and I'll put the link in the show notes, but your Med Flash Go, the attempts to help students get the information they need, understand what they're supposed to study, and be efficient with that to allow for some open time to do what they love and can, you know, get energized from. So I will put the link to that because I do think, you know, we can use technology in a lot of ways to help with the efficiency of studying. And I remember, you know, making note cards for my husband in medical school and helping him study off of note cards. And so I am really interested in that piece of it. And I really am such a huge encourager of people to find those things that give them energy, because I was the same way in pharmacy school. I studied, you know, a good 12 hours a day when it was exam time, and you know, it's not natural for the body. And I do love the message to burnt out physicians as well, and that, you know, loving what it, you know, realizing and loving what is, and that sometimes we just have to understand this is where we're at, like you are right now. Yeah. In your night float, and having the resistance of wanting it to be different only creates internal discourse and, you know, exactly. And so, yeah, I do love those pieces. So thank you so much, Taylor, for coming on and sharing your insights with everyone. I know this will be extremely valuable. I will include all of your links, including the MedFlash Go, for those who want to learn more. And I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. That was really fun. And if you'd ever want to have me back to talk about MedFlash Go or technology or anything else, let me know. I'd be totally up for it, and I appreciate your time.
Absolutely, and I would love to have a second talk. I think we could dive into all kinds of topics. I love the work that you're doing, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Minding Wellness Podcast. I had such a great time talking to Taylor and sharing his insights with you regarding his own experience as a physician resident and some of the important ways he practices self-care and encourages others to do the same. If you enjoyed this episode or any previous episode, I would greatly appreciate it if you would head over to iTunes and leave me an honest review. Deanna from refreshedmoms.com says, "Claudia's gentle spirit of compassion is so soothing and encouraging. The topics and experiences she shares with this podcast is so needed. Every episode I've listened to has brought me hope. It's like a little self-care investment for your soul each and every time." That means the world to me, Deanna. Thank you so much for leaving that review. And I cannot wait to continue bringing you topics and insights that will help you mind your wellness. Until next time.